From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of June, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll check the weather forecast with Mark Russo from Risk Pulse out of Chicago. And along the way, we'll take a look at the agricultural news for the day and update you on what's been happening in the cash grain situation with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, now joins us to take up what's happened in Chicago for the day. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start with the corn market because it did manage to drop about a nickel. Is that just on expectations that we'll have another good round from the weekly crop progress report later today?
Well, the conditions report expected to be just about unchanged. Last week, the corn crop was 77% good to excellent. The average guess is about 76% good to excellent, but those ratings are at the high end over the recent history of the report. So for the most part, corn crops looks fairly good in most areas. Not everywhere, but most areas. Also, too, we're looking at another good round of moisture across Midwest here as we move into midweek. Totals up to 3 to 4 inches in some areas. It might be too much rain for some low-lying areas, but traditionally, rain makes grain, and the trade's going to interpret it as a little bit negative for say. So we're probably set up to see maybe a little higher yield estimate as we move forward here. But spread unwinding, seems like they bought beans, sold corn on the spread. Interesting thing about corn is the December futures contract here at this 377. If you go back to last year, 2017 December corn futures contract, that was kind of a swing point in the marketplace. It held several times, but as we got into late summer when the crop was so-called fairly made, we went below it, and that's kind of the end of it there for a while. But last year's chart, 377 was the key, and also to the 376 area, which was the contract low. We took that out by half, three-quarters of a cent. I was able to close back above it. And so we're at a critical junction here where we need to sort of dig in and hold. Now, when you go back to last year, we made a low here in this first day of summer, and we went higher for 2 weeks. We made a new high going into July on some weather concerns or fear. So maybe the trade will take notice of that trend from last year. And oftentimes, whenever we see a change in season, we see a change in trend. So as we move into late week activity here, hopefully we'll see some type of short covering and some buying interest and get some type of trend change, Todd.
When you compare to last year, the fundamentals are completely different looking into the end of the season, marketing season, that is, for the 2017-18 crop compared to the 2018-19 as well, somewhat 700 million or 600 million bushels difference.
Yeah, and that's what's bullish about this market. Last year, the crop was no good, didn't look very good. Good to excellent category was not that high, but the yields turned out much better than expected this year. Everything looks just picture perfect. The crop's going to win the beauty pageant, but then we might be set up for some disappointment. So we got a long, long time to go here until the crop's in the bin. But as of right now, it looks like it's fairly good shape. Expectations are good. Producers are disappointed the market's going down, but they're a little bit more comfortable with yield prospects and probably willing to make some sales here on some recovery bounces, Todd.
Well, on the soybean side of the ledger, it looks like it's all been about trade over the last month, and that the trade managed to get most of what they think the tariff might put into place, in place, at least before that really goes into effect. Is there any more downside risk to this?
Well, hopefully we're going to hold here. Basically, if they're going to put tariffs in 25% tariff It feels like the market wants to discount the world price by 25%, and the producer's taking the hit on this, whereas the other products that's moved across the world, it's more of a fixed cost. So the sad part is commodities in general are the weak link on this whole trade issue. Hopefully we price a lot of the negative news in there. We are cheaper than some of the southern hemisphere beans. Also, too, there's a little ray of hope in through here, July 6th, and there's supposed to be some negotiations take place between now and then, and hopefully they can come to some type of conclusion on this, because the buyers of beans there in Asia really don't want this to take place either. Technically, we made a new low, closed higher. Psychological-wise, the July futures kind of took out support at $9, was able to come back and close a little higher there. Crop conditions report this afternoon. Good to excellent categories, just about to stay unchanged at 74%. Good to excellence, which is, you know, fairly high. The trade has become short beans by about 28,000 contracts. Momentum indicators are flatlined. If you're not a technician, you need to probably take a look at some of the technical stuff, because it's kind of interesting just look at these technical indicators down here, just down at the bottom here of the range.
Anything you want to tell us about for sure?
Well, I think that pretty well covers the livestock market. Continues to hang in there. Seasonally and traditionally, these fats kind of roll out of bed in through here. The demand kind of slows now, but cash continues to remain a substantial premium to where the actual board is. So cattle market continues to have a bullish situation on the future side of the equation there.
Hey, thanks so much, Kurt.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, you know, one important aspect of President Donald Trump's Friday announcement that $50 billion in Chinese goods would soon face about a 25% tariff was the timing of China's response. It took place immediately and in the form of a statement that went live in the very wee hours of Saturday morning in Beijing. China did not waste time in saying its retaliation would be equal in impact to the U.S. duties and imposed on the same schedule as Mr. Trump's actions. The first wave of U.S. tariffs on some $34 billion in goods is expected to start the 6th day of July, which leaves not a lot of time for China, assuming the two sides agree to resume trade talks, to make the changes in its own economy that would prevent the U.S. tariffs from going into effect. The reality, of course, for U.S. agriculture is a whole lot more pain. Beijing has already hit back on Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs, and it looks like more will be coming towards agriculture. In particular, a 25% hit on the price of soybeans. Those farmers that live in North and South Dakota particularly concerned. 70% of the North Dakota crop goes out the PNW to China. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue was asked if his agency or the administration would be willing to compensate producers for any losses they might be subject to because of the tariffs. He answered that question, but not until after he had talked a bit about supply management and the NAFTA agreement as it relates to Canadian dairy producers and some of their milk products. Perdue takes exception to the idea that he's not optimistic that a deal can be struck on NAFTA, or at least a bilateral, with Canada.
I don't recall saying I was not optimistic. Again, my message to Canada is, if you want to maintain a supply management system in dairy, then manage the supply and not overproduce and depress world prices, which affects our producers in the export market. So that's, unoptimistic in that way, and I think that we will resolve a deal later on. And I think, again, regarding your question in the CCC, I think the answer is when we determine market impact of the mitigation effort. I think we've tried to make that clear, is that you don't have that, you can't demonstrate any damage on the day that tariffs are announced. And we're going to look at this very carefully. We're going to calculate. We have been calculating market impact on a weekly basis for a number of months now, frankly, as the conversation has progressed. So the answer is when we can determine, and if we determine there is legitimate and lasting market impact based on market disruptions of tariffs and retaliation, then we're prepared to take action.
The Agriculture Secretary has broad authority to support the farm sector using the CCC, or the Commodity Credit Corporation, that was created back in the 1930s for the sole purpose of stabilizing and protecting crop prices and farm income. The financial institution has $100 million on hand that it borrows from the Treasury, but it can borrow up to $30 billion at any one time. The number of those dollars had been restricted until earlier in the year when Congress passed its most latest appropriations. And finally today, the deadline for the House to take up the farm bill as it was voted down earlier in a revote is this Friday, and that's supposed to come after a pair of immigration bills get their chance on the floor for a vote. However, the whole immigration debacle taking place on the border at this point and some of the president's comments made on Fox and Friends Friday morning last week have put all of that into flux. It simply means this: if the immigration bills aren't voted on this week, whether they pass or not, the farm bill most assuredly will not be voted on by Friday of this week, and then the House will have to go back to the drawing board. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Do visit our website at WILLAG.org. Click on the calendar there to see where I'll be next. One of the big events that we have coming up is not this Friday, but the following one. That's the 29th, the same day that the USDA will release the grain stocks and acreage figures at 11 a.m. in the morning. And I'll be back in the office, or at least close enough to be back in the office at that time, to get those numbers up on the website. However, I'll start the morning off early in Assumption, Illinois at Assumption Fest, and we have a great panel of analysts there for breakfast. You can come. This is open to everybody, so the breakfast is from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., and we'll be up at 8:30 a.m. along with Ellen Dearden, Kurt Kimmel, Kim Holzapfel, and Dan Zwicker. So if you want to see all of those folks, Dan's in town now, actually, in the state, and he's going to stick around through that 29th day of June. You can catch up with us there at the Assumption Fest breakfast. Now, speaking of catching up with folks, I walked over this morning to NSRL, that's the National Soybean Research Lab, where Nathan Klucheski has his office and lab, and he's been getting a lot of questions and a whole bunch of soybean plant samples asking about seedling diseases in treated soybeans. I asked him the same question farmers have been asking: why do I have seedling diseases in my treated seeds?
Why am I seeing these diseases now? You gotta remember, these beans have been in the ground for 30, 40 days, most of them by now, and our seed treatments are going to give us 2 weeks, 3 weeks of protection. So under perfect conditions, you're going to see about 3 weeks of protection. We're well past that point now. And the other thing to keep in mind with seed treatments is they're not fumigants. So when you put them in the soil, it's not like they're just killing all the pathogens. A lot of these pathogens are going to be overwintering in tissues and as structures in the soil, and they're not going to be affected by a lot of these chemicals until they wake up, until they germinate and start growing. Once that happens, then they're going to be impacted by these chemicals. And so just because you put them in the ground, if the environment wasn't right, if the plant wasn't at the right growth stage to cause those structures to germinate and the pathogen to grow, you're not going to see a response to your seed treatment either. So it's important to keep in mind at this point, this is a complex of different diseases. There's really not a lot you can do right now. You might see some recovery of these plants. If it dries up a little bit for us, you might see these plants throw off some more advantageous roots and pick up a little bit. As long as they have green tissue, they're able to produce photosynthate and produce new roots. But some of these plants are gonna go down. You're gonna see some stand losses. The good thing about soybeans is that they're pretty robust. They're able to compensate pretty well for stand losses, so hopefully we don't see a lot of yield reductions this year, but definitely be aware that this is something that you're going to see. Spraying a fungicide on at this point isn't going to do anything. and just kind of keep this in mind as we're going forward.
Nathan Klucheski is the extension plant pathologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I walked over to his office and lab this morning. It's based in the National Soybean Research Lab right on the south end of campus here at the University of Illinois, not very far from my office in Mumford Hall. And then I made a trip just outside of Champaign-Urbana and stopped at the first soybean field to see if I could find some of these diseases. Of course I did. Well, at least I think I did, and frankly, it looks pretty much just like those great big wilted areas that you might find that were underwater for a while. However, they don't recover, well, not very well, if they have seedling diseases in them. Again, Nathan says there's not really anything to do about it other than to be aware that it is there, even if you had a seed treatment, because the seed treatment just doesn't last this long into the season. Let's check the cash grain market now. Greg Johnson is with us from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Hey, Greg, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, Todd. How about yourself?
I'm doing very, very well. So let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the cash grain market. How's it reacted so far to what's happened in Chicago and, of course, the tariff situation coming out of Washington, D.C.?
Well, you would think that with the futures going down, that basis would get better, and I think it will eventually, but we've had such a sharp sell-off in futures that I think the basis traders are a little bit, hesitant to improve basis levels immediately, because this thing could whipsaw back the other way, I guess, is the thinking. So we haven't really seen basis levels improve dramatically like we normally would, with such a sharp future sell-off. I think that still could happen. But I think the traders must be waiting to see if this future sell-off stays down or if we see a reversal.
So they're just waiting to see the real, what they consider the real impact of the tariffs at this point. And then why is it we would tighten the basis up exactly?
Well, if we really are going to lose some of our soybean export demand, then the basis wouldn't necessarily need to get better. But in general, whenever the board goes down, farmers tend to get a little bit more tight-fisted and not wanting to sell on a down market. And so basis is all about farmer movement and commercial movement. So if the corn and beans are not moving because of a lower futures price, then the basis tends to have to do the work to get some of that corn and beans to move. So basis tends to get better when futures get worse and vice versa.
Is it possible that the premiums being paid out of Brazil could stimulate greater global interest in buying soybeans, and so the global movement of beans could go up rather than down?
Sure, sure. In fact, I've read where, other than just moving destination points around, the overall export demand may not change all that much, but that's long term. I mean, if Brazil's got more beans sold to China, then the countries that used to buy from Brazil would have to buy them from the United States. And so, we could end up exporting just as many beans as what we would have before all this, but that's months down the road. In the short run, the traders are afraid that this could lead to a decrease in U.S. export demand, and so we've seen futures prices drop over a dollar in the last 2 weeks.
And just before I let you go, to be clear, it probably would be exported at a lower price.
Correct, yes.
Right. And your bids for the day are?
Our cash corn is $3.39, new corn $3.57, cash beans $8.78, new beans $8.96, and new crop wheat is $4.91.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. Well, it's a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Hey, Mark, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, glad to be here, Todd.
Well, tell me a little bit about the weather forecast for the Corn Belt, starting in the west and moving towards the east, I suppose. That generally makes most sense.
Yeah, well, let's first talk about temperatures, where, today, another impressive massive day of heat across the Midwest. Not necessarily on the maximum temperature side of things, a lot of 90s, potentially a few isolated pockets getting up to 100 degrees, but that's actually more on the minimum temperature side where we are seeing or saw this morning minimum temperatures only in the 70s and just a lot of high dew points helping to support those high minimum temperatures. Temperatures will now be easing here as we go into tomorrow and then through the balance of the week here. Still be warmer than normal, but just not to the levels that either we saw over the weekend or what we're seeing here today. But nonetheless, it's a warmer than normal pattern. We see that in place not only this week, but also into next week as well. From a rainfall standpoint, bottom line is this week is shaping up to be a pretty active week, actually across much of the Corn Belt. There's going to be daily thunderstorm, chances of thunderstorms and a pretty frequent progression of storms. First off, in areas of Nebraska, into Kansas, South Dakota, and then working its way eastward, including in that from southern Minnesota, Iowa, northern Missouri, all the way here across Illinois, even eastward all the way through Ohio. So a pretty active week. Next week, it still looks on the active side, but doesn't look as active as this week, especially the eastern or central eastern Midwest areas in and around Mississippi River, eastward through Ohio, look to be at least the more favored area for higher rainfall amounts here next week.
All in all, the Corn Belt looks to be in pretty good shape. However, in the Northern Hemisphere, there are some places like the Black Sea region, which has been suffering from dry weather.
Yeah, the driest area has really, it's been in the Ukraine and especially southwest Russia that's been driest over the past 30 days. But that dryness does extend north and west into Poland, northern Germany, England, and all the way up through Scandinavian countries. Specifically for Ukraine and southwest Russia, that area has been the driest over the past 60 to even 90 days, and it looks like that continues as we go through month's end and even into the early part of July. Now, temperatures will be biased warmer than normal, especially this week, but there will be some variability in readings. The most as we get into next week, the most extreme temperatures will be in southwest Russia, where highs will be in the mid-90s for several days this week before an easing of temperatures take place. So we're not yet in a mode where there's consistent extreme heat, but with the drier than normal conditions combined with the warmer than normal temperature for this time of year, that's certainly accelerating the depletion of soil moisture reserves.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Dad.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.